Lesson number 12. We have great promises. What is a promise? A promise is a guaranteed assurance. In the scriptures, these assurances are based upon conditions. Many times, cause and effect is seen. I've been trying to differentiate between promises and predictions. I will come again is a promise as well as a prediction. In the last days there shall be false prophets. This is a straight prediction, not a promise. Many of the promises of God are predictions. Many of the predictions of God are promises. But a promise is a guaranteed assurance. It's guaranteed by God, supported by His oath, that He will carry out certain results if we will comply with certain conditions. And His promise and His prediction, we wait for a new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. And this is but one of hundreds and hundreds of promises in the scriptures. Part number one, Peter remarked that these promises were exceeding great and precious. Valuable, powerful and valuable. Now what these promises do for us? They enable us to become partakers of the divine nature. Now this is the crux of Christianity. This is the crux of this quarter's lessons. How may I become partaker of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust? Now if you recall in our study on the new birth, we sensed there and realized that the most important activity on the part of a human being is to will. He wants to do it. He wills to do it. With his fumbling, trembling, inefficient, weakened hand, he takes hold of the promises of God. He chooses to do that. He has spent his life lying. Now he says, Lord, I don't want to lie. Please help me. He has spent his time cursing and swearing, indulging in improper acts of various kinds. Now he says, Lord, I'm old. I don't know how I can be born again, but I'm ready to start. You take over. You give me your spirit. I will read your word. I will discover from it what I should do, what I shouldn't do, how I should think, how I should act, how I should relate. Now in the word he will find many exceeding great and precious promises. Right in this connection, in 2 Peter chapter 1, God says if you add, He will multiply. We are to add all these fruits, all these virtues. He gives them to us. And if we will add day by day through a willing mind, He will multiply to us resources that will make all things that are in His will possible to us. So these exceeding great and precious promises enable us to partake of a divine nature, of the divine sap of the true vine that will produce the peaceable fruits of righteousness or right doing. Part number two, if we will abide in Jesus Christ, He will do His part. He will in no wise cast us out. He is not going to cancel. He is not going to renege. He is not going to change His mind. If we take hold of Him, if we will to be His disciples, He will never let go of us. The contingent, the regulating factor is our willingness. God's will never overrides human will. He always allows us to choose. Even though we've begun the Christian way, we can still, day by day, choose to do wrong and choose to do right. Now the faith is part of this choosing. The faith is the committing. The faith is the believing. The faith is the putting of ourselves on the line. It is faith that connects us with heaven and brings us strength for coping with the powers of darkness. In Christ, God has provided means for subduing every sinful trait, resisting every temptation, however strong. It doesn't matter what we feel. Doesn't matter what we feel. The trouble is, many go by their feelings and not by the promise that God has said, I will never leave you, I will support you, I will answer your prayers above all that you can ask or think, I will keep you, I will guide you by my eye. Part number three, while we may start this, there may be times in our lives when we're conscious that in certain areas we don't believe as much as we believe in other areas. And this was so in the case of the father that came to the disciples and then to Christ and cried out, Lord, I believe, help thou my unbelief. I like this. He was honest. He realized that while he believed in many areas, that there were some areas he found it difficult to believe. And so he says, Lord, please help me where I don't believe. This acknowledgement of lack, this transparent candor, is extremely healthy. Jesus is ready to supply all our needs as soon as we take this attitude of humility and of distrust of self and of reliance upon God. Help thou mine unbelief. And as Desire of Ages indicates it, that we should look to Jesus even for the building up of weaknesses in good traits in our character. Part number four, the Father loves us. Why? Because he loved me, Jesus said. And if we are in Christ, then we are surrounded by that great love. The Father loves you because you have loved me. The Father loved Christ. We are in Christ. The Father loves us. We love Christ, and the Father sheds his love on us. Love begets love. Love multiplies love. It deepens. And when we love somebody, there's an old English statement, love me, love my dog. We love all things that pertain to it. When we love Jesus Christ, we love everything that pertains to Jesus Christ. And when we love Jesus Christ, we go into the ocean of divine love. When we believe, because we love and appreciate, all God's promises become effective. Everything that the Father promised Christ is ours the moment we love Christ and the moment we believe in him. Part number five, I have overcome. This is one of the most precious of the promises. Jesus said, these things have I spoken unto you. That's the whole world, the whole word, the entire Bible. Everything that Jesus spoke has been spoken to us that we might have peace. This is the purpose of the Bible. This is the purpose of the gospel. This is the purpose of every discourse. That the inner conflicts, that the external conflicts, that the fears, the forebodings, the uncertainties, the anxieties, the dreads of encounters in life, of encounters in death, of the hereafter, all might be dispelled. These things, Jesus says, I have spoken unto you, that ye might have peace. And then he adds, while you're in the world, you will have tribulation. But cheer up, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. In other words, while we may be captives in tribulation, while we may be harassed by Satan, God has overcome in Jesus Christ every problem, and in the ultimate, the victory is assured. Tribulation may be very difficult. A tribulum was a series of nightsticks attached by leather thongs to one heavy handle. And when the lictor laid on the tribulum, it was a bone-smashing, bruising kind of beating. Jesus used this word tribulation, the infliction of bone-shattering problems. But in spite of them, we are to be of good cheer, happy, hopeful, trustful, believing, filled with peace, inner conflicts resolved. And as one reads the stories of the martyrs of old suffering all kinds of indescribable horrors, it's amazing how many of them stayed cheerful, how many of them could bear it up, sing to the last moment, realizing that they were part of a victorious army that had overcome the world. And while in this one skirmish, the enemy seemed to be getting the better of them, they knew that when the war was over, they would stand with their captain in the final triumph scene. Part number 6, we have an advocate. Now this is the picture of a judgment. The whole world is moving towards the judgment. We are going with our enemy towards the magistrate, Christ declared on the Sermon on the Mount. From the very earliest dawning of consciousness till we are laid to sleep in death, our trip is towards the judge. Every word that we say, every act that we carry out or contemplate, every thought and intent of the heart that we cherish, every anger harbored, every adulterous thought indulged, one day will have to be encountered for, will have to be accounted for. What are we going to do? We have begun the Christian life, so many times we trip and fall. We have tried to do 1,000 times what we know we ought to do, and we have failed. What are we going to do? Well, the exceeding great and precious promises now buttress, support, and sustain us. Jesus says, I'll never leave you, so hang in there. If we confess, he says, I will forgive you. Believe that. Not because you feel any different, but because he has promised it. You have tried and failed, you are a cripple. He can enable you to walk. You are blind, he can open your eyes. You haven't listened to his voice, he can unstop your ear. You are a dull witness, he can loose your tongue. Jesus is the one who can do all things for the man or the woman or the child who comes to him totally surrendered. But now when we have done all this, we still trip, we still fall. And if any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father. Now I love to contemplate this kind of a scene. The Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment to the Son. Jesus is the judge. John tells us that he is the advocate. In Revelation 3 we discover he is the faithful and true witness. In Hebrews chapter 12 he is the lawgiver. In Isaiah 53 he is the substitute. He is the Baal's bondsman. He is the elder brother. Now, if ever there was a court of law stacked in the favor of the guilty one, the final judgment is such. Everything is in favor of the condemned. Jesus is my elder brother. He's died for me. He's paid my penalty. He's my judge. He's inviting me to come. He tells me not to be afraid. He tells me how to confess. He tells me what to do, that he might acquit me in the judgment. What a wonderful promise. The promises of God shine like glittering stars through all the darkness of earth's night, guiding, sustaining, buoying us up. Let's read them. Let's ask for grace to live by them.